The Home Show with Sinead Ryan on News Talk.
Hello and welcome along to The Home Show. My name is Sinead Ryan and I'm your host of News Talk show about homes, housing, interiors and architecture. Coming up on this episode, a new summer series is starting on old manor houses turned into exclusive wedding venues. You might never have heard of them, but they are used by couples who want a completely immersive and exclusive experience. Why are local authorities reluctant to fine derelict homeowners? Living on a houseboat is getting more expensive. We'll be finding out about that. And Natasha Rocca-Devine on building a wellness space right at home. On the podcast, we love to hear from listeners. If you would like to get in touch with us, you can do that by email at thehomeshow@newstalk.com, or you can find me on Instagram and I take direct messages there. And I love to hear from listeners because it is you that we are doing the show for. So if there's a guest you'd like us to have on or a topic you haven't heard covered, well then get in touch with us and we will be happy to look into that. Now, more and more people are choosing to use somewhere you might never have heard of for their wedding. These event-exclusive estates are not hotels. You can't book in if you're not attending, but they're usually completely booked out for the whole year. Dotted around the country, these original manor and grand country homes have found a new business model. To find out what's behind their rising popularity and as part of our new series on these lovely, lovely houses that you might not know, I'm joined by Tara Fay, wedding planner to the stars. Tara, you're very welcome to The Home Show.
Thank you for having me.
Have these venues always been around, or is it a relatively new departure from the traditional hotel wedding?
It's a great question. I think they've been around anyway for the last sort of 10 to 15 years. They started growing in popularity, but it's only possibly in the last 2 to 3 years that they have become so much more popular for couples.
What do they offer a couple that's different from a hotel experience?
Essentially exclusivity. They want to spend time with their guests where, as one couple said to me last week, they don't want to see somebody cycling around outside the window when they're in the middle of their wedding reception or cocktail hour. So they want a space that is away from other people where they have time with their guests and they have a great guest experience, because that's what it's about now. It's not about necessarily things. It is about that time that they're going to spend with people.
Give us some of the best that you have worked with your clients, these exclusive event venues.
Oh, there's so many great ones all around the country. I mean, I think Quinamana down in Kerry and John Brennan does such an amazing job down there. And it is sort of one of those quirky places. It has such amazing views. And they are so open to sort of changing things around. A lot of the times people, when they're picking a venue, is because they want a flexibility to change things around a little bit, like maybe change the location for the ceremony or something like that. Gloucester House is another incredible one, and they come with their own peacock as well. So they have lots of different spaces. Every single venue has its limitations or sort of like, you know, sort of quirks about it. And it's about, I think, with couples, they need to sort of think about what is important to them and then choose accordingly.
Okay, well, listen, Tara Fay, continued weddings for the rest of the year. I'd say you've probably a very, very busy summer ahead of you. And thank you for joining us on that topic. Now, also on the line, and first up in our series of these beautiful manor houses being turned into event venues, is Clochjordan House in County Tipperary and its general manager, Julie Baker, who's also the daughter of the house. You're very welcome along to The Home Show, Julie.
Thank you, Sinead. Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be on.
Now, I was actually at a wedding myself in Clochjordan a while back, and it is such a lovely place. But I was surprised to see, like, it's a working farm.
Yeah, it absolutely is. So I guess to kind of we are an exclusive family-run wedding venue. And we do other events as well throughout the year. Based in North Tipperary, but we were originally dairy farmers, and my dad Peter was a dairy farmer. But in the present form, working farm to us really means a more kind of farm to fork ethos. I don't know whether when you visited, did you manage to walk around the grounds where we grow all of our veg and our flowers, and that's all brought into the kitchen. So I guess in my mind, growing up on the dairy farm, working farm is that. And then the kind of present form is really where we produce all of our veg, herbs and flowers, as I said, and with that all comes into the kitchen. So the current guests will view it as working farm, and in my mind when I hear farm I think dairy.
Indeed. Now, when I say farm, just lest any of the urbanites, Dubliners, be put off of booking their wedding there, this is a Soho House vibe, you know. You're not going to be tramping around in your wellies.
No, absolutely not. I guess we've got quite a unique place. As you've seen before, Sinead, we are a country house wedding venue. But I guess with the origins in our dairy farm, we've converted a lot of our old outhouses, our actual milking parlour, everything to our bedrooms as well, to really kind of give quite a unique but very comfortable setting for our guests and our couples.
Indeed. Now, talk to me a little bit about the property itself, because it's 800 years old. Just give us a little bit of the history. Did you grow up in that house yourself, Julie?
Yeah, I certainly did. So even further back than that, there's kind of a unique tale about the house. So as you just mentioned there, the house is about 800 years old. And I guess there was a Norman tower house and a Norman crusader called Demarisco. Apparently brought over a stone from the River Jordan, and that is built into the house somewhere. And I guess giving Cluck Jordan its namesake, Cluck Jordan, as in the stone of Jordan, and that is somewhere in the grounds or in the house or in the walls of the house. But I guess moving a little bit further, further in the years, in the 1800s, a family called the Hodgins family purchased the house, and they had an arboretum on the grounds. Now, they would sell seeds all over the world. So there's actually plants and trees in the Phoenix Park, in Central Park, in New York, and in Hyde Park in London, actually from Cluck Jordan.
Gosh, so, that's very interesting. Very interesting. So a huge lived history there in the property. Talk to me about how you, your parents, or maybe a previous generation, changed its purpose and its use.
Yeah, absolutely. So in 1914, I guess quite unique times in Ireland, my great granddad Sam Baker purchased the house then from the Hodgins family. And from there, my granddad became a dairy farmer, Val Baker. And then after that, my dad took over that farm. And I guess we grew up on the dairy farm as kids. And when my dad got out of dairy farming, my mum actually set up the cookery school. So that was back, I guess, when we were teenagers and, you know, we were all in secondary school. Mum had got amazing leader funding to create the cookery school in some of our outhouses. And she would teach classes to teenagers, school kids, adults from all over the country. From that came the weddings. So in 2012, we did our first wedding. And we, at that point, I think it was a 40-person wedding. And at the time, we said, oh my God, this is absolute madness. How are we going to do this? Pulled it off. And from then, we just grew and grew and grew and grew. From that, then my husband, Stephen, and I moved back to the business about 6 years ago. I always knew, kind of growing up in the business, that it would be for me at some point to, you know, hopefully get involved. Neither of my siblings are necessarily involved, but they are still passionate, of course, about our home and, you know, going back and definitely giving us their feedback. But my husband, Stephen, and I, as I said, moved back 6 years ago then from kind of corporate jobs to get involved. And it's been onwards and upwards since then, really.
Indeed it has. And I'm always kind of curious about farming families, because to some extent it is that expectation that you will come back and carry on the legacy and the name and the place. Did you feel that, or was it, look, I'll go off and do something else knowing that I'm going to come back to this? Or did you feel compelled to?
Yeah, no, absolutely not, Shade. Like, I trained in UCC, I did food marketing, and I worked for a couple of other companies. But I guess I always knew that that was, I guess, hospitality and food and business as well is where my interests for me interestingly. So I really, you know, it was kind of the perfect fit for me once I was moving, but I certainly didn't want to move back to Clochtwar in a rural area without a partner. if I'm to be quite frank. So I guess when I met my now husband Stephen, and COVID hit, and you know, we were saying, okay, what's going to be our next move? Then we said, okay, now is the time. And we actually had the privilege of getting married in the venue ourselves 3 years ago. So that was a real joy to be on the guest side of our own venue in a very special,
indeed, well,
a very special occasion
you
as well.
You have a first-hand knowledge then of what it's like for couples. I'm wondering, I'm hearing a detecting there, but I'm not going to ask you, Julie, whether you interviewed potential husbands on the grounds that they were going to be running Clock Jordan House with you in the future.
Oh no, I don't. I think he certainly left with the opportunity.
All right, and so, when it comes to an event venue, we heard Tara Fay there earlier just talking about what couples look for and why they book a property like this other than, say, a regular hotel. And she seemed to kind of say, look, it was for the exclusivity. There's nobody wandering around in spa robes, you know, no kids flying around that aren't invited. Is that what it is with Clock Jordan? It's that kind of immersed experience that you're only going to meet people who are also at this wedding.
Oh, absolutely, Sinead. And, you know, I really echo what Tara has said there, because I think there's something out there for everyone. But I think couples come to us because they are looking for that, number one, bespoke experience, number two, exclusivity. And I think that is important in a sense that, as Tara said, you're not looking at anybody else walking around in their robes, or I guess guests dragging their luggage through reception in their casual clothes while you're all dressed to the nines having this wonderful occasion. And you know, I think that there's a certain, when you go to an exclusive venue, there's a certain magic in that you're kind of taken away from the real world in a sense, and kind of placed in this placed in this beautiful setting where, you know, you're with only your family and friends, and you're looking around and every single person that you meet is part of your party and there to celebrate you. I think that's really important, and along with the team that are looking after you. And then another area I think that's important as well is I really see that our couples and our guests really value a family-run business too. I guess that there's that extra level of care gone into the experience that they are having, you know, and every single detail is thought out. And, you know, if you do get feedback, you act on it absolutely straight away. And if you don't get amazing feedback, it hurts you. It hurts you so, so personally, you know, and that doesn't happen very often, but we're in a human business as well. So I guess, it's really, I think the care and attention in a family-run business is second to none.
Yeah, because you don't have this big corporate entity that you have to report back to, and the whole thing is a little bit more anonymous in a hotel chain, for instance. Now, one of the other points Tara Fay was making was about accommodation, and she said it's always a good idea for brides and grooms to know, can guests be accommodated on site, or are they going to have to run shuttle buses into villages with B&Bs and hotels and all that, because that's an added headache, I suppose. Now, in Clock Jordan's case, you do have a lot of accommodation. I stayed in one of your cow sheds or cottages or something on the premises there. Absolutely top notch, a stunning little self-contained unit there. Talk to me about the effort involved and the expense, Julie, because like it's a lot of money to put together this level of accommodation.
Oh, it really is. So we can sleep 100 guests on site, and we actually have another property that's about 2 minutes away from the venue called the Distillery Cottage. And actually, distillery meaning that back in the 1800s, it was one of the largest producers of whiskey in Ireland. So we have that property where a lot of our couples will stay the night before, and then on site, approximately, we can sleep 100. Now, I think with a lot of country houses, as we know, the actual country house itself might have, you know, 10, 12 bedrooms or 8 bedrooms, for example. And so when a venue is starting, I think it's what for us a priority was absolutely maximizing accommodation, because, you know, we are in a rural area. So the last thing you want to be doing is hopping on a bus at, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning to jet off to a local hotel. And look, to an extent, that does happen. But the more the guests that can stay on site, it is far more convenient.
and in a kind of an immersive, you're totally immersing in the experience because you're going to meet all the wedding people at breakfast the next day and there's still no strangers and you've made new friends with it. Well, listen, onwards and upwards, Julie, it's a fascinating history and it's a beautiful house. So for anybody planning the wedding, although I'm sure you're probably booked out for the rest of the year, are you?
Yeah, this year we've got a kind of a couple of winter dates left. However, 2027 is really looking very well for us, as well as 2028. And I think a lot of that is down to we've added a new space called the Baker Room. We're constantly reinvesting in the venue. So I guess our reputation is getting stronger and stronger and stronger as we go along the years. And yeah, we're very, very proud of what we do at Club Jordan House.
And so you should be. All right. Well, listen, my thanks to you, Julie, for coming on and talking to us about Club Jordan House. We're going to be featuring lots of these properties over the coming weeks, and we're going to be investigating their backstory. I'm sure not all of them are as ancient and interesting as Club Jordan, but we will bring them to you and we'll be looking at different ways that these properties have been repurposed and reused over the years. So congratulations on making it such a lovely place, and thank you for joining us on The Home Show. And prior to Julie, we had Tara Fay, wedding planner, talking about that.
The Home Show on News Talk.
Now, with tens of thousands of derelict properties lying vacant and unused around the country, for some owners, the incentives to bring them back into use haven't worked. So the government introduced the stick approach and instructed local authorities to find them. But according to the Taoiseach recently, Micheál Martin, he said some of them, quote, didn't bother. Well, here to tell us more is the Irish Independent's Maeve MacTaggart, who has the story on this. Welcome to the Home Show, Maeve. How many properties are involved? Do we know, or does anybody know?
This is the big question, and this is why the government is introducing this new version of this derelict property tax on a phased basis. So we believe that there's almost around 19,000 vacant properties whose owners will now be targeted at this by this new tax. You know, people will see it's a real visual representation of kind of dereliction and vacancy in local towns. You know, it's kind of unavoidable. People will know off the top of their head probably five or six, if not more, in their own local areas. The issue with kind of defining this is the definition of dereliction. So something that's vacant may not necessarily be derelict. There's issues around ownership, around identifying the owners, and being able to really measure the rates. So that's where this new tax comes in.
Right. And was it up to local authorities to do that for each of their areas? I mean, were they supposed to send people out to look up and down highways and byways and see a cottage that looked empty and work out who owned it and if it was derelict? Like, were the resources put in to managing this?
This is the source of the current row. So previously we've had a derelict sites levy, which has been the responsibility of local authorities and councils. So they have each been able to manage their own derelict sites register. The issue with that is the government's argument this week that they just simply haven't effectively taken that in hand. You know, within that derelict sites levy, by the end of 2024, which is the most recent year that we have figures for, 10 local authorities didn't collect a single cent of the levy.
And
which potentially leaves around or over, you know, 26 million in levies was just left on the table at the end of that year.
Right. And these are, a lot of them would be rural rather than city local authorities. Did they give an explanation why, or did they simply, as the Taoiseach said, just ignore the memo?
Their argument is that they really don't have the resources or the capacity to be able to enforce this. The Taoiseach in the Dáil this week really disputed that. He said that some have had the capacity because some local authorities have been doing their best really to take it in hand. You know, he gave the example of Limerick. But, you know, there were 10 others really that didn't collect a cent. So his argument was that some really just simply didn't bother. And that brought about the need for this new derelict property tax. And he believes that, you know, the involvement of revenue in collecting that will, in his words, kind of focus the minds a bit more.
Yeah, well, of course, there's nothing like a big stick to get people behind it. And revenue, I mean, when the local property tax first came in and people kind of gave a collective shrug of their shoulders, the minute revenue got involved, the compliance rates hit 98% or something like that. So having them in, but as you say, some local authorities managed to do this. They wanted to do this. They were engaged with this. Is there a political issue here, Maeve? Because this isn't going to go down well in local communities. You know, they mightn't like the idea of Mrs. Murphy's house up there being derelict and not being used, but they don't want Mrs. Murphy to be charged for that if she's in a nursing home or her son is in America or whatever, and he owns the house. Is there political pushback at all on this?
Well, this is where the conversation around this is going to take place. So this derelict property tax is going to be introduced on kind of a phased basis because of the fact that it will be quite a monumental task to kind of build this database. We don't really have an exact figure for the number of derelict properties across the country at the moment. So this will start in urban areas with populations of 4,000 or more. So we'll see this, you know, that'll capture Dublin City, Cork City, and then a later second phase will then come to populations with, come to towns with populations of 2,000 or more. So we're kind of going to see this gradually come into place. You know, the government's been very heavily criticised by the opposition this week for kind of failing to take it in hand immediately. But the government has argued that they just simply can't do this all at once.
Right. And Simon Harris, Minister for Finance, has weighed in on this as well. And he said that he's worried that the delivery of this levy policy isn't equal across the country. He outlined 26.2 million euros, which had been levied by local authorities on the derelict property tax, but not collected. So again, is that a resourcing issue, or is that, look, we'll be seen to be doing the job, but we're not actually going to do it? Or where does that gap lie?
It's a huge sum of money. And when you think about it, you know, how many properties could that sum of money have brought back into use? You know, with that figure, the local authorities are arguing really that they just didn't have the capacity. You know, that it was one in three councils failed to collect the levies at the end of 2024. So that was Wicklow, Westmeath, Tip, Monaghan, Louth, Leitrim, Fingal, Cavan and Galway City and County Councils. They have argued that they just simply don't have the resources. While the Taoiseach does argue that this new property tax is going to be measured not by the amount and not by the monetary sum of levies collected, but by how many properties it actually brings back into use.
Okay, and what's next now? So you have somebody who has a derelict property, they're being fined, and they say, I still can't afford, even with all the very generous grants, to do this up. Will they be forced to sell?
Well, this is where we're at the moment. You know, there's a hope that this new, I suppose, stick, as you've called this quite aptly, I think, will help people bring the properties back into use. Otherwise, will really lead them to sell it, to be able to kind of pull that lever and return more properties to use for housing.
Right, they're kind of forcing their hand because they'll have no other choice. All right, well, listen, we'll keep an eye on this, Maeve, because there's obviously lots more to come on this. It seems like a kind of a punching down, maybe to some extent, by the government, but local authorities will be charged with collecting this. And you, in the meantime, will stay on the story on Irish Independent and independent.ie. That's Maeve Mac. McIntaggart, who wrote the story on this. Now, as we all know, renting or buying a property in Ireland is challenging at the best of times. But what if you could buy a house with a nice river view? If that sounds like something that appeals to you, well, maybe a houseboat is what you're after. But there are challenges that is making life on the river much more difficult. Here to discuss it now is Ronan O'Keefe, who owns and lives on a houseboat and is currently in Lough Quay, I think, Ronan, are you?
That's correct.
Welcome to the show. Now, talk to me a little bit. It's one of those romantic things that I think we've all thought about from time to time. What is it like living on a houseboat every day?
Just perfect. The views, the wildlife, being connected to the nature.
What gave you the idea to do it? What was your inspiration?
Growing up, watching Rosie and Jim as a child. That idea of living on a barge was always an idea. But then the boy one of them initially was a bit too much outside my budget at the time.
Yeah. You were living with your parents. What was your work and what was that like for you when you were trying to save up, like so many hundreds of thousands of people, to buy your first home?
Well, I was a care assistant when I was living at home with my mum and dad. And now my father would have Parkinson's for the last long while. Kind of healthcare that I was doing was home care, so I was flexible and in and out, so I was around, you know.
So talk to me then about how the structure of it works. You have to buy the barge, obviously, so that's like a loan and make that repayment. And then what other charges are there for living on a river like you do?
Well, the last few years now, the only charges I've had to face was winter mornings. So that would be from, I think it's November or December to April. And that's €68.
€68 a month?
For the whole
The whole time?
Basically my annual rent.
Wow, okay. And that just allows you park the barge where it is?
Yeah.
So you're paying your £68, which is effectively just to park the thing. And then after that, you are responsible for your energy, your diesel, your, you know, their services.
That's the way it has been for the last 2-3 years now.
How is it changing now, Ronan, the charges? Because Waterways Ireland are introducing a new raft. They're increasing the mooring fees and other charges. Do you know how that's going to impact on you?
I don't. There's a lot of opposition against it.
But I'm sure you wouldn't mind paying a little bit extra if you got the services that you are looking for.
No, it's like, well, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. If the services was good, if the, yeah, absolutely, I'd have absolutely no problem spending much more than €68 a year.
Okay, well, look, describe the boat for me. Tell me about your living quarters and what it's like. It sounds to me that it might feel a little claustrophobic. And so tell me how you've designed the inside of it.
Her name is the Mary Jo. She's a 36-foot touch-steel cruiser. And, well, there's a fair amount of steps. I'm in the galley now at the minute, like at the kitchen table.
Yeah.
And then we'd have like the cooking area and sink and countertop on the right hand side. And that is outside the window then. I have the view of McDermott Castle, I believe it is.
Beautiful.
And then there's like a fee bunk up where the bow is. So inside that, there's a V-shaped couch, for want of a better word.
Mm.
And then we have the wheelhouse up behind me, and the bedroom and toilet back then behind that again. And over the toilet, we've got a nice little sun area, fly deck, and they can drive the boat from up there as well.
So, apart from your €68 a year, what does it cost for you to live on the houseboat?
Very little. Bit of gas. That obviously goes up in the winter. Because I've been using a super stair during the winter.
But listen, you're obviously enjoying it, Ronan, and it's the life for you. So thank you for joining us on the Home Show. We'll keep an eye on what's happening with those charges from Waterways Ireland. It seems to me that there's probably scope to charge more, but offer more in return. And as Ronan says, he and other boat owners would be perfectly happy with that arrangement. Ronan, thanks a million for joining us on the Home Show. Back now to your daily grind on Lough Quay.
The Home Show on News Talk.
Now, the wellness industry has exploded over the last few years, but from gyms to saunas to yoga, it's all like very expensive to be joining clubs and all of that. So how about incorporating some of those ideas in your own home? Well, here to help with stylish designs and a hefty budget is Natasha Rocca-Devine of NRD Designs. You're very welcome back to the Home Show. Now, you come on here a lot of times and you keep the budget low and you scrimp and scrape and we repurpose and reuse and recycle. So that's not happening today.
No, I just went for it. I was like, one of the, we're in the summer. I'm a bit more relaxed with the design and the budget. But yeah, I think it's one of those things. It's very tricky to stick to budget. I mean, you can in terms of the layouts and the interiors of a space, you know, with finishes and stuff like that. But ultimately, gym equipment is expensive.
Yeah, you know? If you're going to build a space just for wellness, for your own sake, that is going to cost a chunk of
100%.
Change. 100%. But people are using, I know the modular homes have been in the news because, you know, the permission to rent them out and all that. But if you don't need to do that, that's ideal to kind of put in a mini gym or
oh, absolutely. And I do think that, like, if you can afford it and if space-wise as well and your neighbours aren't going to be given out, you know, give them a few bottles of wine and bribe them. But I do think if you can afford that, like a modular and one that's already pre-built is easier because I, you know, it's one of those things, myself included, when you think you're to do DIY, oh, we'll just convert a shed. It's a lot more expensive and timely. So if you can get something that you could just pop in your garden, even if it's really small, and another thing is saunas, you know, there's so many different things you can do. But I suppose it's really, I suppose today for us is breaking it down to what you can afford, what your space is like, and I suppose what you need as well.
Exactly, because these kind of sound like a great idea. I have a space in my house, not a modular garden thing. I wouldn't be able to fit it, but a room where I like the idea of lighting a candle, throwing down my yoga mat and doing my stretching. I don't do it. I have the mat, I have the candles, I have the space, and I'm like, oh, I can't be bothered. So you really have to want to invest in
absolutely, and
this
I think
kind of
that's
trend.
A really good point. So I would say that's a perfect start for everyone. Is before you start building, try it out. I'm not saying bring in loads of gym equipment into the garden. Your neighbors will definitely be looking, but you know, I like before you like convert a room, like build something in the garden, like actually see how much you use it. Like give it a trial for 3 months. It's similar with wallpaper or interiors. I would say try it out. Try it like soft, for like put in a soft furnishing of a colour, for example, if you're going to paint the wall. Yeah. Because it is very expensive. And, you know, it's hard to get in and out. And with gardens, it's a bit trickier. It's more people involved because you've got obviously neighbours and you're bringing things around or up to attics because usually people do one or the other, I think.
Indeed. And very often these spaces can become junk rooms, you know, because if you've converted a box bedroom in to do your yoga or your Pilates
or
whatever.
Yeah, and it's a wasted room.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, you can follow Natasha on Instagram at Natasha Rockadivine. Now, the reason I'm saying that is that she always posts up amazing pictures. This is your ultimate Pinterest board, which Natasha has. You've done a lot of research on this. You've looked at absolutely these are all very covetable, by the way. They're all beautiful spaces.
Absolutely.
But what are the underlying principles that people need to be aware of?
I think realistically, particularly if you're going outdoors, you have to think about like practicals, like electricals, plumbing, like, you know, anything for leak. Like you can't just put DIY shed. You have to think about the practicals of the space. Also heating and like mold and stuff like that. Like just
we're not in California.
Yeah,
are
we're
we?
Not. I wish, but with the sunshine.
You used to live in LA.
I did used to live in LA. And like I just take for granted, you know, that, you know, over there people would live outside like al fresco dining every night. But for here, I would just say like it is an investment. So if you don't have the money, don't do it. You know, keep it inside. Like if you're starting off and you're already panicked, don't. Because the equipment separately, which you can also get, you could get secondhand. Like there's ways around it, ads.e and all the, you know, different, so many different options.
Okay, but be
really
practical.
Be really practical before you start and see what you need.
Okay.
So if you're not a runner, why are you buying a running machine? Like it's not necessary. If you're a person who likes weights, have weights, or like you were saying for yoga, start with the mat, start with simple and then work it out. And, you know, like write down what you need and be honest with yourself and the budget and like, what is this for? Because if you're going to use it multi-purpose, then don't get the running machine. You know, you might put a TV in there and have it as like a games room as well.
Do you find though that having a dedicated space, whether it's in the house or in a modular garden room, does it encourage you to use it then more?
I think so. I think you have to. I think it's psychological. I think Irish people, I love
guilty.
You. I love you, myself included. But I think I need discipline. I need to know that that's a place. And I need, when I walk by, I feel a bit of guilt. I need to feel that guilt to get up there.
To get,
you know,
up and
otherwise, you're not going to get it when everyone's such busy lives, online, in person, whether you have kids or not. Everyone's lives are very busy at the moment. You need to have a space where you can go and it's not where your children are. I mean, I used to do yoga or like online courses during COVID. And sure, my dog would be jumping on my tummy, you know, my little Monty. You know, you have to have a space that is actually practical.
Now, you've been very creative here because one of the images you've brought me in are utilising a back wall in a garden and putting in like a vertical gym there.
Exactly.
With poles and things to hoist yourself up and pull yourself from.
Exactly. You can do that. And that would obviously, you know, as I said, that's another thing is you get the proper trade if you're going to do that, because that is a health and safety risk. You know, if you put that up yourself, you don't want to be messing around. It's just simple things like that. Like, look at what you have in the space. And if you do have a sturdy wall, you just obviously get the right equipment and get the right teams. And that's all it is, because these are heavy machines.
Now, we've spoken many times on the show about how nature helps us in
absolutely
every aspect of our life. And if we're talking well-being, well, then plants and flowers and grass and all that is the ultimate feel good kind of thing. So if you have a wellness space in your home, a room for yoga or a Pilates machine, would you recommend bringing in greenery into that
absolutely
space?
And obviously real plants are ideal, 100%, because I just think you just naturally relax. Anything with elements, I think it's when I study design, I think it was scientifically proven that if you've elements in a space, whether it's a fire, plants, water, it'll just naturally relax you. So if you're going for that, I don't know if you should have it if you're trying to pump yourself up to like Peloton bikes. You might need not, I'm joking. But I do think plants, I just And it's so straightforward. You can go to Woody's, you can go to like HomeSense, TK Maxx, you can go to charity shops and get big pots, you know, and then plants. And then look, if you can't afford or practically if you can't manage them, there are faux plants. I think even psychologically seeing them. And I think if you can't, what I'd always say to anyone, if you can't manage real plants or flowers, but buy them occasionally, you know, that way. So invest in them. Like, even if everything is a faux plant, bring in like real flowers for the scent.
Yeah.
Because I do think, you know, you love gardening, you know, the smell of flowers or like, you know, just different herbs, different
and actually
scents.
Even just the having to mind that, being a plant mom is mindful. It makes you look after it. It makes you kind of brings you into that state of mind
100%.
Where you can do meditation or yoga or, you know, kind of some. Now, it's different, of course, if you want to do high octane, you know, gym bro kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But even then, that idea of stone and wood and fresh
Absolutely.
Air.
All the elements and all the finishes and materials are so important here as well.
You mentioned there going into shops and buying little things. I mean, you can make a space look very pretty for a lot less, you know, because when I think of kind of that meditative space, I'm thinking of wicker and candles and, you know, pastel colours and things like that. That's very easy to replicate.
Absolutely. That's what I'm saying. So that's where I'm saying being realistic, because not everyone wants to have running machines and weights, and that's absolutely great. That's where the high budget comes in. But if you're designing a space that's wellness / relaxing, yoga, even just to go read a book or have a glass of wine, you know, you really can. I mean, we're so blessed with brands, whether it's like Jessica Kia, like, I mean, you can go high end, Brian Thomas, you can go literally mixing and matching. I think for me, it's mixing and matching what you like, but I definitely think go for the natural materials. Mm. Go for wicker, go for like the earthy materials, because when you walk into a space, it absolutely transforms you. You know, like if you walk into like a place that's very natural with plants and candles, it just, you naturally relax.
It's like telling your brain, this is what we're going to do now.
Yeah, I think, and I genuinely think you do.
Deep breath.
And another trend, which is very obvious, like, and I think everyone sees it in gyms, is the opposite, where it's very dark and sleek. And I'm sure you've seen that in hotel gyms. Mm. You know, that's another option, which some people find amazing. I personally, if I go into a gym and it's dark, I'm gone. I'm out. I have to go home. Like, I need light, a lot of light or just brightness. So that doesn't work for me. I'm better with the kind of more natural materials.
I'm out of there if I hear thumping music. I just can't bear it.
Exactly.
I want to do my gym workout, but I don't want to listen to other people's like boom, boom, boom idea 100%. Of what's motivating.
And that's another thing, is bringing in, considering music and, you know, just candles, music, like practical things. Like, and these aren't expensive. You can get a mobile speaker. You know, you don't have to, or you can have earpods. But I genuinely think all of these are like having blankets. Like, I went to a fantastic retreat with Sophie Anderton in her house. Oh my God, it's amazing. I can't wait to go back. But she had blankets and just simple things, Sinead. It was like just so well thought, like the simplest of things. Mm. Like, we did diaries and did acupuncture and like journaling and things. But it was just like having the right material. She had sheepskin kind of rugs underneath the yoga mat, and these, like, with
those sensory respect, kind
a sensory
of experience,
and she had plants everywhere, and then we were looking out to the garden in Wicklow, and it was just so beautiful. And I just, these elements, and this is so simple, and this also, Sinead, is great anyway regardless of exercise, just going into this room and chilling out, you know, just taking a space from life for a couple of minutes.
You're a fan of water features.
Love
and
water features,
tinkling water and all that. Now, I'm not, like, I'm a lot older than you, Natasha, which wouldn't be hard, but I have that sense that if I hear tinkling water and I'm in the middle of my yoga, I want to go to the loo.
Oh, don't worry, I know women have been there. No,
but
it's definitely a female
indoor,
thing.
Outdoor, it is something that is, again, brings us back to nature and very, very relaxing.
It is. And I think, look, each person's different. Some people love candles, some people love water, some people love elements like fires. I'm not saying put a fire in, but, you know, when you look outside and you see people camping, if you've ever gone and you see a fire, like, you do relax. There's this, like, the sense of the crackling, or even just like a wood fire at home, if you could have that beside you or, you know, nearby, anything like that for me is so incredible. But I do think, you know, if you're going to be into the bathroom every 5 minutes, maybe time that one out. maybe pick the candles over that. But, you know, it's just working. And also in Chinese culture, you know, they always say it attracts money. Like, there's like a science behind it, putting water in certain spaces, it attracts good fortune and money. So I like mixing, like feng shui, you know, that kind of idea in a design, but you have to map out your room. Like, there's a science behind that, but look, each to their own on that one.
Okay. Now talk to me a little bit about colour, because when you're planning an interior, it's going to be totally different whether you have a lovely quiet reading nook, a yoga mat out, candle lit, versus you're pumping the Peloton, as you said, or you're doing your free weights. How does the colour palette help in that regard?
I think for me, it's, for what I'm seeing anyway and what I like, is they're kind of opposites. I'm sure you agree, is it's very light or dark. So I always find the gyms with that are very high intensity or hot yogas are always dark for some reason. Mm. And maybe it's just the science behind it with like certain specific like task lighting, because obviously you're doing like weights, you have to be careful. But and then I think the kind of more natural meditative rooms are just like you say, earthy and lighter rooms. And I think that would be it. I don't think there's a lot of colour in these rooms, probably because you'd be overstimulated. I mean, you can bring in colour in blankets and things, but I actually like the idea. I know it's really tricky to keep clean of very vanilla like creams and like very natural, like in a relaxing room. Mm. I don't know, there's something about it. Obviously bringing greens and plants, but actually not too much colour. And then for the gyms, whether you like dark or light, I definitely think the darkness really great. It does ground you. I just personally, I need a bit of light to motivate me, and like I get a bit too sleepy. The yoga side of it is amazing when it's dark. So I think for me, it's either dark or light. I don't think a lot of colour at all.
Yes, indeed. I was in a hotel gym a while back, and I was on the, I don't do the Peloton, but I was on the walking machine, the treadmill. And normally I listen to a podcast or a bit of music or whatever, have my ear pods in. But this one had a screen in front of it and you could pick your view. So you could be walking on kind of through the hills or on a beach.
Like and a simulator, yes.
It was shocking to me the difference it made. My head believed I was there.
Yeah,
I went,
absolutely.
I was on a warm beach, it was sunshiny, and as you walk, it's moving with you. It was an extraordinary thing. And I think that kind of thing can
like sensory
fool
things.
Your
yeah,
head.
Yeah, and I think that would be a great example of having a TV in that room. You know, for me, especially financially and practically, everyone's on budgets. If you had a TV, you could play like set scenes, and like it doesn't have to be, you know, like a built-in screen.
Yeah,
thing.
Because there has to be an app for that. There has to be.
Oh yeah,
you can just look up these beautiful moving views.
Even if you go onto YouTube, you can see like, you know, sunsets and things like that. Like each their own. But I fully believe that we all are so busy. Our brains are so busy. I think women more so than men. Maybe I'm wrong, but myself, like with lists and everything, it's 24/7 that we need to actually nearly force ourselves through visuals and through things like that. And that's why I think this is where interior design, obviously it's my job, but I genuinely feel that having this space, whether it's in the garden, a little area where you have a little box or you put your yoga mat, or it's a huge gym, or whether it's the attic or your spare room, we need to create the space. If you don't create the space, it's not going to happen.
No.
And you need the visuals and you need to know your personality. No water for Sinead, candles for Sinead. I'm all about the water. But you know, each, and you need to have it simple. You need to, like, I'm very like, work smarter, not harder. Don't make it hard for yourself. If you know you're going to, it's going to be tricky, have everything there. Water, access to water, access to mat, like a blanket, whatever you need, so you're not running in and out.
Make it inviting.
Exactly.
All right. Well, listen, we always love inviting you on the Home
Thank
Show,
you so
Natasha.
Much.
You can look at some of those ideas that Natasha has put in. I have to say, they're all stunning. And you'll have them up on your Instagram.
Yes, in the next day or
okay,
so.
Okay,
yes.
Fantastic. All right. My thanks to Natasha and indeed all our guests. That's all we have time for this week, this episode on the Home Show. Hope you enjoyed it. My thanks to Aoife Breen producing. Ben Sweeney was on research and Stephen McClune on sound. We'll get to do it all again next week, and there'll be another episode dropping for you. If you want to get in touch with us during the week, it is thehomeshow@newstalk.com, and you'll find me on Instagram at SineadRyan100.
The Home Show with Sinead Ryan. Saturday at 5 on Newstalk. Conversation that counts.